Hi, this is Colin McCallan. Thank you for listening. Please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. Thank you.
Welcome to Is This Legal? Here are your hosts, attorneys Colin McCallan and Russell Hebbets.
Hello, hello, everyone. My name is Russell Hebbets. I'm here with my partner, Colin McCallan, and we're coming to you for the first time live in 2024. Happy New Year!
Greetings, everyone. Hope your new year is off to a great start and you had a great holiday break.
Colin, how's your 2024 going so far?
I would say 2024 is treating me pretty good. Coming off a good holiday break, been busy at work. That's one thing we should mention, by the way. We know that it's been about a month since we put out a podcast. That's Russ and I have just been busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. What can I say? It's been nuts around here. But we're finally getting to sit down and talk to you, the loyal listener, about whatever we're going to be talking about today.
Well, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. Oh, yeah. So everyone's probably really, really excited to turn this on.
We should just take more breaks.
Once a year. We're now on a once-a-year schedule, folks. So enjoy this one. We'll see you again in 2025. Well, today,
we're here. We might as well do something.
We may as well give the people what they want. And so what we have today, another true crime podcast, this is going to be covering the trial of Kevin Monahan that is just starting in New York right now. And we're going to be talking about this case and another case, basically a line of cases that involve homeowners who have fired guns and shot people who have come to their property by mistake. Not right. Doing anything, not intending to do any harm, but homeowners, there's this very troubling trend lately, especially of just homeowners being so scared and frightened, and they are just shooting people who are coming to their door, or even not even to their door, up their driveway, as is the case with Kevin Monahan.
That's right, Russ. So Kevin Monahan is charged in New York for the killing of Kaylin Gillis, who was a 20-year-old girl who, with some of her friends, were driving to a destination. It looks like they got lost, and they drive onto the driveway belonging to Kevin Monahan. And this is, I should mention this, we'll talk about this in a little bit. This is a sprawling property, Russ. It's not like this is like a cul-de-sac with houses on top of another.
Yeah, it's very rural. Yeah. It's a very rural area, so houses are spread out. There's forests, there's trees. That's why they got lost, is they didn't have cell coverage, so they couldn't get perfect directions. And so they end up, it's actually like a caravan, two cars and a motorcycle all traveling together. They pull into Kevin Monahan's driveway, which is a long, windy driveway, thinking that's where they were going. They pulled up. Kevin Monahan, by the way, is a 66-year-old man who, by all accounts, doesn't really like visitors.
Right. There's apparently a witness who might testify at trial that he had voiced his displeasure with the fact that his driveway gets kind of used as a turnaround point. And anyway, what happened in this case, kind of getting back to it, is Kaylin Gillis's car is, you know, basically trying to figure out how to maneuver this driveway. They realize they've made a wrong turn. They're trying to get out of it. And then all of a sudden, Mr. Monahan comes out on his front porch and opens fire on the car with a shotgun. He shoots twice, and he tragically strikes Kaylin Gillis in the neck, where she basically bled out in minutes. Yeah. And her friends tried to drive her from the property. You mentioned the cell phone coverage. This was a huge issue, Russ. They couldn't call 911.
Right.
So they had to drive to a town in Salem, New York, which is up the road a little bit. And by the time they could get aid to her, she had passed away.
Yeah, she was pronounced dead at the scene. And we'll talk about those allegations. I mean, Colin said open fire on the car. And, you know, it really depends on which side you believe. And we'll talk about that. But right now, I want to go through the kind of procedural history, like what has happened. This tragic death happened on April 15th of last year, of 2023. Mr. Monahan appeared first in court on April 19th. He was denied bail. A judge said, no, we're not going to give you bail. We feel like the gravity of this case outweighs your right to get out on bail. The case was then, just 2 weeks later, transferred to a different county because of a conflict. Do you know what that conflict was?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, so I don't know what the conflict is, but it got transferred, and that happens sometimes if, for example, you know, the judge has a connection with the case, or, you know, there's some reason, maybe someone works for the county, then it has to be transferred. But for whatever reason, it gets transferred to a neighboring county. Bail is still denied, and that's somewhat unusual on a normal case when you have someone who has no criminal history, which apparently Mr. Monahan had no convictions. He had some charges, but no convictions.
Yeah, and it's weird. I was reading about the bail hearing where his attorney was really arguing for a low bail.
Right.
Basically saying, look, this man's been law-abiding. He's been in the community for 40 years. You know, the prosecution brought up some things where he had apparently, I don't know, maybe caused a disturbance at the DMV or something. Right. It didn't end up in criminal charges. And his attorney joked and said, well, gosh, if that were bail criteria, everybody would be denied bail for having an outburst at the DMV. Long story short, the court said, look, your actions were way too reckless. You're dangerous, and you're not getting any bail, sir. Thank you very much. So he's been in custody this whole time.
So here we are now. Trial got continued once, but trial started, jury selection started a couple days ago. We're now talking to you on the 11th of January. I believe it started on the 8th, was with jury selection.
Let's talk really quickly, Russ, about the actual charges that he is facing. So the big one is second-degree murder. In New York, second-degree murder is basically, they're alleging that Kevin Monahan, with the intent to cause the death of another person, cause the death of such person, i.e. Kalen Gillis. It's that simple. This is actually the exact same murder statute for second-degree murder that we have here in Colorado. Notably, they did not charge first-degree murder in this case, Russ. That usually requires an element of deliberation, right, or intent. They are going with second-degree. They're just basically saying, look, we have to prove an intentional killing. We're not going to get into deliberation here.
Yeah, so that's the only difference between first and second, is that deliberation that Colin just brought up. So they are arguing that there is still intent.
Yeah, now it is still it's 25 years to life. So it's still a very, very serious offense.
Right, yeah, for as far as consequences, right, the difference is life without parole, 25 years to life. But when you're talking about a 66-year-old man,
that matters, yeah.
That matters. That is, even at the bottom end, that is probably a life sentence.
Right.
If not, he's getting out when he's very geriatric.
Couple more charges real quick. He's also charged with reckless endangerment. That kind of speaks for itself. Obviously, firing a gun into a car is going to be reckless endangerment. And then tampering with physical evidence. This is interesting, Russ. The police are alleging that Monahan maybe removed one of the shell casings from the shotgun from the scene. From what I can tell, I don't know if they've got direct evidence that that happened. I think they're just missing a shell case and believe that he took it. His attorney is arguing that this was due to police incompetence.
That's an easy defense.
Yeah, I mean,
right. How do you prove he took it? All you can prove is it's missing.
Right, and frankly, I don't think anybody's really that worried about the tampering charge compared to the murder charge. I think that's the big kahuna, as we say.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he gets convicted of only the tampering charge, I think he'll be doing backflips. And I think if the DA only gets the tampering charge, the DA is going to look at that as a pretty significant loss.
Right.
So let's talk about the the second-degree murder case. Now, one thing that we've talked about this in a past podcast, I actually meant to look it up, but I don't have it at the tip of my fingers, but we did one on the Stand Your Ground case and the Castle Doctrine,
right,
some time ago. So you can go back and find that one, and if you want to really deep dive into that. But kind of leading up to this case, this is what this whole line of cases, this is what Colin and I, where our heads went, because, you know, we have a situation where you have a homeowner who says, I was scared by these people,
right,
coming to my house, and I was potentially just defending myself, defending my house.
That seems to be exactly what he's going to be saying at trial, by the way. I mean,
well, you know what? I listened to the opening argument, or I didn't listen to it, but I read about it, and I actually don't think they are going to be saying that. based on the opening. So I'll get to that in a minute, but let's just touch on the stand your ground castle doctrine.
Sure.
So what's the stand your ground?
Well, stand your ground comes from the idea, 38 states actually adopt this, where they say that if you are faced with a threat, you have a right to stand your ground and deal with the threat using potential force.
Right.
In other words, you don't have a duty to retreat from that situation.
Even if you can safely retreat.
That's correct. Now, notably, New York is not a stand your ground state. They're one of the 12 states that have some other type of law, where basically it's not as protective, I guess, for this person who's standing their ground. Now, in Mr. Monahan's case, though, you're talking about the other legal doctrine, which is the castle doctrine, which is, this is the notion, right, Russ, where you have, I guess, the most rights protecting you, where you can use a force against an intruder. And you're going to be justified in using force if there is an intrusion upon your home, or if someone's trying to break in your home to commit a crime.
And that's the key difference, is that in your home. So you don't, it's not as expansive as the stand your ground doctrine. So in New York, if someone is shooting at you, clearly that's a threat. But if you can run away safely, you have to do that.
Right.
Even if you have a gun.
Right.
You can't pull out and shoot back at that person if you have an ability, an avenue to leave safely.
Exactly.
Now, the castle doctrine, that says when you're in your home, then you can use that force. You don't have, and really it comes down to, you don't have a duty to flee out your back door if you have that ability when you're in your home. So you get that extra protection. Now, in New York, it is, you don't have that blanket ability to use deadly force, which clearly Kevin Monahan did, unless Kevin Monahan believes that it's necessary to essentially stop a burglary.
Right. Now, that is very important, Russ, and I hope that all of our listeners are really tightening up your eardrums here, or whatever.
Got your ears on, to quote the Dukes of Hazzard.
Okay, there's a difference between trespass and burglary.
Yes.
Okay, so what we're getting at here is, what degree of force are you allowed to use when fending off someone who is trespassing your property versus committing a burglary?
Yes.
Okay, let's first talk some definitions, okay? Trespass, that's basically where someone is just on your property unlawfully.
Right.
Okay. They're not intending on committing a crime. They're not committing a crime.
Right.
They're just on the property, and it doesn't really matter why. Now, that's technically criminal. If the person is knowingly on the law, on the property, and they don't have a right to be, that's trespass. Now, you do not have a right to use deadly force against a trespasser, Russ.
No, you have a right to use force.
Correct.
But not deadly force.
You can use physical force.
Yes.
So you can use a proportionate force. Like, you could go up, and if the person refuses to leave, I think you can push that person off your property, something like that. And if you got into a fight, you could defend yourself and you wouldn't be charged criminally.
You can pick them up by the scruff of their neck and their belt and then just kind of rock them and then just toss them. Just give them a big old toss right over your property line. You are allowed to do that.
I'm seeing this cartoon in my head of what to do with that. Get out of here. Now, deadly force, on the other hand, that can only be used to fend off, like, basically a burglar. Like, now, what is burglary? A burglar is a trespass, but there's an additional element. A burglary also requires, in addition to a trespass, that the person intends to commit a crime on the property.
Right.
So if the person is going to break in to steal something, at that point, you are allowed to use deadly force to fend from a home invasion or anything like that.
Right. And that's a really subtle difference that almost no one outside of the legal circles knows. Like, that example you used is the typical burglary. You ask the person on the street, what's a burglary? Well, you're breaking in and stealing something. Doesn't have to be a theft, though. You could break in intending to kick the crap out of someone. You could say, I don't like that person. I'm going to break into their home and I'm going to punch them. That is a burglary.
That's right.
because you're breaking in, you're doing that trespass that Colin talked about, yeah. and then you're committing another crime. Does not have to be theft.
Yeah, so you, I mean, in that situation, I think, I don't know if you said it, you could be unarmed, right?
Right.
I mean, you don't have to have a weapon. You don't have to present a deadly force to the homeowner. But if the minute you breach entry and basically through your actions suggest that you're going to commit a crime on the property, a homeowner can take action into their own hands, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and that would, in New York, justify lethal force, because then that's a burglary.
Right.
So on this case, that's where Colin and I thought this case was going through all our prep. But just before we got on, opening statements happened, and the defense, here's their argument. Their argument is that he goes out, he sees people trespassing, he has his shotgun, he fires one warning shot in the air, not aiming at them, not trying to hit them, fires a warning shot to get them to go away. He then trips, stumbles, the gun falls, and the gun goes off and shoots Kalen Gillis.
Interesting.
So that is the defense. So that kind of
They're saying this was a complete accident.
Yes. They're saying there was no intent whatsoever. They're saying that second shot had no intent. It was complete accident. It was negligence at best.
Interesting. So, and who's going to disprove that? Apparently, this guy was just at home with his wife. And, you know, so there's really not eyewitnesses to this situation. So that's an interesting argument.
Yeah. So we'll see. We don't know what the other people in this caravan saw. Did they see him pointing the shotgun? Or were they too worried about getting the heck out of there after that first shot was fired where no one was looking, right?
Hmm.
So there's questions like this. This very neatly gets around a lot of the issues on the case, because it was going to be very tough for the defense to say that I'm shooting this car to defend my home when I've had no interaction with them, when I have no idea if they're intending to continue to actually commit a crime, and he was outside of his home at the time.
So, Russ, here's another thing that tells me. I mean, first of all, that's an interesting defense. Second of all, what that tells me is that this man is going to testify. I mean, let's face it, if they're offering that evidence in opening statement, you know, opening statement is basically what the lawyers believe the evidence is going to show. Hearing what you just told me, I think there's one person who's going to be able to testify as to the chain of events that you just described. And unless his wife was right there, that's going to be Kevin Monahan.
Yep.
That makes sense to me from a defense perspective. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, how Russ and I would defend this in a little bit, but I guess kind of getting into it right now, when you're talking about a self-defense claim like this, I think it's important. You want the jury to hear from your client.
Right.
Why were you so scared? What was going through your mind? You know, why were you concerned about people driving up your driveway? You know, what was dangerous about this to you? And it gives him a chance to kind of explain to the jury his thought process.
It's really smart. And I mean, and apparently that's what he's going to testify, like you said, and he has to. You said unless his wife was right there. According to what I read, his wife was hiding in the closet.
Okay.
So she didn't see squat. She didn't see Jack Squat. Right.
She saw one guy and Jack Squat.
And he was on the porch with a shotgun. So it's going to be very interesting. Like what the defense is going to do is they're going to paint this guy as a really, they're going to make him empathetic, mm-hmm. right? They're going to say he was scared. He's an older gentleman. He lives in the country. He is scared and that explains why he was nervous, why he may have dropped the gun, you know, all of these things. They're going to try to make the jury feel for him and kind of empathize with him.
And we didn't talk about this, Russ, but I am curious about statements that he made to officers, because apparently he did make statements to officers at the scene. First of all, we didn't really get into this at all. He, after the shooting, the police show up at his property. He barricades himself inside his property. Doesn't come out. Yeah. He's ordered to come out. The police are doing the whole loudspeaker thing.
Bullhorn thing.
Yeah, and he is ignoring them. Apparently, his windows are open. The police can see him kind of pacing. He's on the phone with his lawyer. That's what his lawyer says, kind of getting directions on how to handle this. Now, This goes on for about an hour,
right,
where he's in his house refusing to come out. He does eventually come out unarmed and is taken into custody and is arrested, and that's where he's been ever since. So I just wanted to mention that, but I am very, very curious, Russ, if he has ever told the police on any occasion, by the way, this shooting happened because I tripped and fell and my gun went off. Because if he didn't say those things, and this is a trial invention, I don't know. That might not withstand credibility.
Yeah, and that's going to be the credibility thing, is how the DA attacks it. Like we said, what the defense is going to argue. So what does the DA do about this, right? Because they now have a witness saying this was a complete accident. We said one thing, if there's any witnesses, right, that obviously undercuts it. But if there's not witnesses, then you have to go look at things like Colin was just talking about. What did he do after, right? How much evidence do they have that he hit a shell or took a shell? You know what they do have, Colin? They do have his statements when the police came were that he was told that they were there for a noise complaint. He didn't say, oh yeah, I fired my gun to scare away people. You know what he said? What
did he say?
He said, oh, well, maybe that shot was from hunters in the woods with dogs behind my house, which is a huge problem.
That's a big
problem.
That's a big, big problem.
Because now you have him
lying. Oh, yeah. That's
minimizing, lying. Also,
I mean, a case like this, honestly, from the defense perspective, we always tell everybody, you include a listener, if you're listening straight, don't talk to the police, right? If you're being investigated for this, shut up. Don't say anything. The next best thing, though, in a situation like this would be for the person to just tell the exact truth. Oh my gosh, this was a traumatic situation. I didn't know who these people are. I came out with my gun. I wasn't going to shoot them. I tripped. I fell. It went off. And here we are. That's what happened.
Right.
That might be believable. It might be understandable. But when people are hearing this for the very first time, what are we, 10 months removed from this situation?
Yeah.
Something like that,
yeah.
9 months removed. That might be a little fishy.
Well, here's another really problem for them, and problem with the defense's strategy as they laid it out in opening statement, is that Mr. Monahan never called 911.
Mm-hmm. That is a big problem.
So you're trying to paint this guy as, hey, he was scared. He didn't know what was going on. He didn't mean to fire it. But I'm sorry, once your gun goes off and it hits a car, you better call 911.
Yeah.
You know, he's the one who has phone service there. These people don't even have phone service.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't see anything that said if she had gotten help immediately, it would have changed the outcome.
It sounds like she died pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And it does sound like this was a neck injury. I'm assuming it hit a vein.
Hit an artery, yeah.
So, really, really sad, but that's where we think the defense is going. But Russ, I think this is a great time to take a little bit of a break.
Let's play some Is This Legal with the listener.
I think that's a great idea. So, folks, we will be back after our Is This Legal section to talk a little bit more about this case, as well as a Kansas City man named Andrew Lester, who's in a similar boat as Mr. Monahan. Stay tuned. We'll get to that on the other side of the break.
Welcome, everyone. It is time to play Is This Legal?
I don't normally join on that, but I felt compelled in 2024 to try something a little new, Russ.
Yeah, I like it. Next time we'll have to get some harmony. We'll have to practice. We'll just really nail it for you next time. All right, so
what do we do during Is This Legal for our new listeners? What's this all about, Russ?
What we do is we give our listeners, or a guest if we have a guest, and by the way, we do have some guests coming up. So,
We do,
and they're going to be some good ones. So just little teaser for you there.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned, exactly. Listen to our future ones is what I'm saying, and tell your friends, because it's not to be missed. So what we do is we give you a fictional scenario. It oftentimes includes our old friends Jebediah and Cornelius. And we ask you, the listener, is this legal?
Man, I can't wait.
Well, if you can't wait, I'm not going to make you wait. I'm going to go ahead and jump in and do it.
Let's do it.
So Jebediah is flush with cash. His wagon wheel repair shop is flourishing, and his side moonshine business is raking in the dough as well. He decides to treat himself by purchasing something shiny and new. Mm. Colin, what does he purchase?
I believe he purchases a brand new motor car.
That is correct. So he takes it out for a spin on a country road, but in his revelrous, and by the way, people, that is a word. You can look it up.
Revelrous.
Yep. Revelrous. Mm-hmm. Having to do with revelry. Which you should never define a word with a word, but
revelry is a good time, by the way. I mean, if you are engaged in revelry,
you're having fun.
Yeah, you are in the mix. Yes. You're having a great time.
Yeah. So in that revelrous state, he goes a little faster than he intended.
Understandable.
Well, it's brand new, and he's opening it up.
Absolutely.
Right? But Officer Cornelius sees him speeding and pulls him over with that self-satisfied smirk on his face.
Such a smug guy.
He's a smug, self-satisfied smirk.
Yep.
How's that for alliteration?
Ooh, very good.
Yeah, thank you. So Cornelius fills out the speeding citation in a hurry because he gets a new call about a robbery in progress at the town trading post. Hmm. He scribbles his signature on the summons, throws it in Jebediah's moto car, and peels off to attend to the robbery call.
Right.
Yeah, he's not really attending the robbery.
He's not like a participant.
Yeah, no. So that's not this scenario.
He wasn't invited.
Jebediah notices three mistakes on the summons that Cornelius filled out. Number one, his name is spelled wrong.
Okay.
Number two, his charge is incorrectly listed as a stop sign violation, not speeding.
Ooh, he wrote down the wrong charge. Okay.
He did. And number three, the citation indicates that the court date will take place on a federal holiday when the court is closed.
Ooh. What, Cornelius not usually using his attention to detail.
Yeah, right. Well, he was distracted.
Right.
Right? I mean, trading post.
He was all
post.
Juiced up. I mean, I didn't even know Northamptonshire had a trading post until now.
Oh, I mean, that's where the horses hitch. right in front of there. So, of course there's a trading post. How do you get your sacks of sugar?
For the moonshine, right?
So Jebediah takes his citation to his now on-again girlfriend and local attorney, Myrtle. She says this case will be thrown out. Which of the errors Cornelius made will cause this case to be dismissed?
This is interesting. Okay, can we have the errors one more time?
Here are they. Number one, his name is spelled wrong on the summons.
Okay.
Number two, his charge is incorrectly listed as a stop sign violation rather than a speeding violation.
Okay.
Number three, the citation indicates that the court date will take place on a federal holiday when court is closed.
Interesting. Okay. So, loyal listener, you've probably had enough time to think about your answer. Why don't we go through each one of those in turn?
And we'll give you a teaser right now. There's one answer that's hands down correct, and one that might be correct given the right circumstances.
So let's first start with the name. They wrote his name down wrong. That is not going to amount to jack squat.
Nope.
To continue using our friend Jack. This happens all the time. Clients come to us and say, Colin, Russ, I mean, you're going to march into court and get my case dumped because they spelled Colin with two L's instead of one, right? Right?
Or they spelled Russell with one L instead of two.
Right? Right? Right?
Wrong.
That is something that is amendable. And honestly, that's why they use other identifying information in the summons. For example, your date of birth, your description, your driver's license number, all of that stuff can be used to identify you. That's not fatal to a summons.
Yeah, and frankly, even if they don't amend it, it's still probably going to stick if it's some minor difference like that. So let's go to number two. His charge is incorrectly listed as a stop sign violation.
Okay.
That, it's a problem.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
It's a big mistake.
It's a big mistake.
But it's not fatal, Russ. That is not fatal. At any time prior to trial,
right,
the officer or the district attorney that's prosecuting the offense can amend the charge.
Yep.
And the way we often see this is maybe they'll get the statute wrong next to, they write speeding and then they include like the statute number and the statute number is wrong. That can be amended. That can be changed.
At any time, they just have to ask the judge to do it. The judge will do it. Now, when that would be a problem, what Colin just said, any time prior to trial, if Jebediah takes this case to trial and a jury is impaneled, or if it's a bench trial, the judge starts the trial and they haven't amended it, then he wins.
Yeah.
Because then Cornelius would have to prove a stop sign violation. Yeah. That's what he's charged with.
Yeah. That doesn't happen very often, but it does happen in lower level misdemeanor cases, stuff like that, where right. you just have a prosecutor who's maybe not dotting their I's and crossing their T's. You know right. what I mean?
So if you guess that, you get half a point.
You get 13% if you get that, I think, is the right number.
Well, unless you actually laid out that exact scenario, then you get 100%.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. But otherwise, you get 13. Right. So, Russ, that leaves us with C.
I think we know what the winner is.
No, wait a minute. You're telling me that if this officer writes Jebediah onto a federal holiday, that's going to be what dismisses this case? He can't show up the next day and have it cured?
That's exactly what I'm telling you.
Why, Russ? Why is that the law?
Because for a summons, it requires notice to the person of what they're being charged with and when they're being charged to appear. And so if we have an appearance that is impossible, so we also get a variation of this right around now in the year. Because officers will write down, oh, your appearance date is January 22nd, 2023.
Yeah, this happens for a person who gets a ticket in December, right? Right. So their court's usually a month out. So the officer in December of 2023 is saying, okay, you have court in January, and forgetting that the new year changes, they write 2023.
Right.
Well, it's impossible for the defendant to rent a time machine, go back in time to January of 2023 to appear on that court date. So because it's impossible, it is literally not possible for the guy to comply with the summons return date. So that case gets dumped.
Unless they have one of them their fancy hot tub time machines.
Right.
Which well, then they could do it.
Sure.
But they shouldn't tell the judge if they have it.
Well, and I guess we got to really curtail our legal advice. Look, if you have access to a time machine, I suppose you do have to use it to go back in time to that court date. And right. our advice here isn't going to save you. But of course, if you have a time machine, can you call us and have us over so we can, I don't know, take a trip somewhere? That'd be fun.
There's all sorts of things you could do.
Real quick, Russ, if you had a time machine, where would you go? Like what year? First of all, I mean, future, past.
God, that involves way more thought than like spur of the moment right now. Where would I? I probably would not go in the past because I wouldn't want to mess up the timeline.
Okay. You'd be afraid of that yeah, like.
I like that. Yeah, I mean,
the time-space continuum.
You've seen Back to the Future, right?
I have, yeah. Like, alternate 1985. You don't want that.
That could mess everything up. You're suddenly playing some licks on your guitar and suddenly you start disappearing?
Yeah.
That'd be terrible.
Time travel's so good. I would just for S's and G's, I would go back to the Middle Ages. I think it'd be kind of cool to be kind of like Knights in the Round Table. You know, everybody's got a sword and killing people and stuff. It's pretty interesting.
No central heat, no plumbing. It doesn't sound great to me.
Yeah.
I think I'd be more likely to go to the future.
But you make your living as a prognosticator and a soothsayer, like giving advice to kings about like, hey, watch out for that guy Lancelot. You know, he might turn out to be a traitor.
Yeah, I'm still not sold. Like you basically living high on the hog. So you have a really nice bedpan.
All right, fine. So Middle Ages, what's yours, Aleck?
I'm gonna go live on like a moon base or something.
Okay, wait. You have a time machine that also doubles as a space shuttle.
I'm gonna go to a time when there's just a space elevator right to the moon. So, I mean, anything's possible.
Okay, all right, well, so, good discussion. What about you at home? Where are you traveling? Can you let us know? We want to know.
Let's climb out of that rabbit hole.
All right, back to our regularly scheduled programming. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the main podcast. Hope you did well at home playing Is This Legal? So we're going to get back to this case, but before we do, we teased the fact that there's this other case going on that has kind of a similar set of circumstances. And we are talking about a gentleman by the name of Andrew Lester, who I think at the time was 84 years old.
Right.
No spring chicken. And Mr. Lester is a Kansas City homeowner. And late at night, he starts hearing a loud rapping at his door. Someone's knocking at his door. And it turns out that there is a young African-American man outside the door who's at the wrong house.
A teenager.
He's trying to pick up his younger siblings, but he's at the wrong house. But he thinks he's at the right house. He's banging on the door trying to get his siblings. So Mr. Lester, there's two doors
right.
in the front entryway. There's a regular, like a front door, And then there's like a metal security door that apparently has glass, you know. Those
like glass. A storm door.
Exactly. And so he opens the door to the inside of the house, but the storm door is still closed. And then he shoots twice at this black man, believing that he might be an intruder trying to break at his house. And he shoots him in the head. Amazingly, Russ, he doesn't kill him.
Right.
This young man just suffered a TBI, a traumatic brain injury. And he also gets shot in the arm. You know, this guy falls back on the glass. He then flees, and Mr. Lester gets arrested for attempted murder. And his trial is coming up as well.
His trial's coming up in October. This shooting happened within like 2 days of the Kevin Monahan shooting. So it was this really odd spate of these shootings where homeowners were shooting people outside their homes who were not bad actors, who were just there by mistake.
Right.
And both of them claimed, I was scared. Like the old man, Andrew Lester, said, told the police at the time, I was scared to death that I was being robbed.
I'll tell you what, if you want to see just a curmudgeon-y old man mugshot photo, Google Andrew Lester mugshot. I mean, I can't imagine the stereotypical person saying, get off my lawn, than a guy like this.
It's honestly,
he just looks like an angry man who's kind of...
It's honestly the animation from the Pixar flick Up, the old man.
Yes.
Like, it's him made real life.
He's like a kind
man. He turns out to be kind.
Right.
But,
he's like a nice good guy with balloons and stuff.
But
he's
starts
not
off
a really angry man with guns and stuff.
He starts off curmudgeon-y.
Yeah.
Is all I'm saying.
There's no Disney movie that they're going to make out of the Andrew Lester story.
Right, no, that's definitely not in the pipeline.
This is probably rude, Russ, but there should be like a game show or something where you look at a mugshot and you guess what the person's charged with. I mean, I know, never judge a book by its cover, right? But I'm telling you, we've been doing this line of work for a long time, and I feel like I'm pretty good at playing spot the offense with just looking at a mugshot.
I bet we'd be pretty good at spot the police officer.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We can see cops from a mile away at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
They do have a very similar look.
It really. The way they walk, everything.
And that's not, no judgment.
No
it
judgment,
is,
cops
right.
listening. I mean, we love you, but you guys just kind of have the same deals everywhere you go.
So Missouri, that's where this happened. That Missouri does have a stand your ground law.
Mm-hmm.
So that is that.
Does not surprise me.
Yeah. That has that more expansive rights. And also...
Yeah,
I mean,
he's inside his home.
He's
That's
inside
a huge
his
difference,
home.
I think.
Ralph Jarl, the 17-year-old black teen, had his hand on the storm door. Was trying to gain entry. So his case is much more defensible from a strictly castle doctrine, stand your ground, self-defense standpoint. Like, he has a lot more, but he still doesn't have any communication with him. He doesn't have Ralph Jarl like having a weapon or yelling at him or anything really aggressive other than trying to get in. So, I mean, his claim is going to be, hey, this was self-defense. This was defense of my home. This was stand your ground. I don't have to flee. He was coming in. I thought he was going to do something. And almost all of these laws, I didn't specifically look at Missouri, but New York definitely has it. It's a reasonableness standard from the perspective of the defendant.
A reasonable person standard. So, so what the jury is going to be tasked with in both of these cases is they are going to have to decide whether or not the actions of these people were reasonable. And, you know, they are going to be given law in terms of saying, okay, here's what type of force you can use if you're in your home. Here's what your home means. By the way, one thing we haven't really talked about with Mr. Monahan's case, he's outside on his porch, Russ.
Yeah.
He's not inside his home. He's not locked inside of his home, like where he can be protected. He's out on his porch. That's how his gun was able to shoot at this car. Does that matter?
I mean, I think it doesn't matter given what the defense opening statement was,
right,
how they intend to argue it. If he were arguing the Castle Doctrine, I think it's something you would have to still say he was, I mean, how the statute reads is you're in possession of your home. So is he when he's on the porch? Maybe, because he's inside when he sees them. The porch is an extension. It's something called curtilage.
Yeah, there's a fancy legal word that we use in the law talking about curtilage. Curtilage is stuff that's on a person's property that's maybe tied to the house.
Right, like around their home.
Let's say a carport.
Right.
A carport would be an example of curtilage of a home.
Right.
Anything that happens in the carport is probably going to be tied to the home.
Right.
A driveway, a long driveway, I'm not so sure, Russ. I think like if Monahan walked down the driveway and opened fired at these people, I think clearly that's completely unjustified because at that point, he's not really in his house. He's not in his castle. And again, we talked about this. You're only allowed to use physical force to get to remove a trespasser.
Right.
No evidence this person is going to burglarize his house.
Right.
So, you know, these little things are going to matter in terms of definitions. And honestly, I don't know exactly what constitutes curtilage in New York. It's different in different states.
Right.
So we'll have to kind of see.
But it's definitely area around the home.
Yeah.
So this one, you know, I feel like Andrew Lester has a better case, but it's just so tragic, Colin, and it just smells so bad. And, you know, this kid was doing nothing but trying to pick up his siblings. It's really a tough case.
It is, you know, and we're going to make predictions in a minute, but Russ and I were talking before the pod about like other scenarios where we could look at a fact pattern like this. Door-to-door salesman. Okay. A vacuum salesman comes up to your front porch. He's on your property and he wants to sell you a vacuum. You don't want him there. You got a big sign that says no solicitation, get out of here. He keeps knocking at the door. Are you allowed to shoot this guy? I mean, some people believe that the answer is yes. And Russ, we should talk about that. I really believe you've talked about the fact that why are these things happening? I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. I think there are people who go to maybe Second Amendment websites that have bad information about, here's when you can use your gun. If you're on your property, you're good.
Right.
I mean, Russ, I had a friend of mine. This is an anecdote. I'll just tell you a story that I think illustrates this point. I've got a guy, a good friend of mine, who lives in Denver here, and he lives on a park. And last couple years, there have been homeless people who just schlep up to his front porch and take a nap, like or use drugs or something right on his property. And he's asked me, what am I allowed to do here? I mean, I'd like to, like, if someone's on my property and not leaving, I'm able to, like, I'm able to do something about it, yeah? And I'm like, well, really, the first thing you should do is call the police. I think that's the safest course of action. But, you know, Russ, what you can't do is just open fire on a person who's out there, especially if they're unarmed, especially if they're not committing a crime. And if, yeah, they're there, you don't want them there. It's an inconvenience, but you don't get to kill them.
Yeah,
but I think a lot of people are thinking, well, it's justified. I'm in my home. I get to do whatever I want.
And there really is so much gray on this. I mean, we have a good friend of ours, criminal defense attorney in Colorado Springs, Tim Bussey, who...
Shout out to Tim, great lawyer.
Yeah, amazing lawyer, amazing attorney. He recently won a case where his client was charged, not exactly that scenario, but it was similar. There was a homeless person sleeping inside the, I believe it was like the laundry area of an apartment where all the different apartments shared that common area. And excuse me, he gave him warnings to leave and said, if you're not going to leave, I'm going to shoot you. And he did shoot him. And that was actually ultimately went to trial. And that was deemed to be a justified shooting. Mm. So it's really a wide range. But yeah, the vacuum salesman, I mean, no matter how much you hate vacuum salesmen, right? And I can empathize with that, you know. You can't shoot someone who comes to your porch for any reason, you know, unless they come to rob you, right?
Yeah, and frankly, as a society, you know, don't we want shooting to be our absolute last resort? Like, yeah. I don't think we want people to immediately think that it's okay to go immediately for their gun.
Right.
And anyway, so really tragic case. Russ, Mr. Lester's trial's pretty far away, so we're not going to make predictions about that one. Let's see how things shake out. But with regard to Mr. Monahan, based on what we know, based on kind of everything, We like making predictions. What do you think? Is he going down on this?
Yeah, for me, it's really tough because the key piece of information I want to know is, did any of the people in the other cars witness Kevin Monahan pull the trigger on the second shot? If they did, he's going down 100%. No chance at a not guilty on that. If no one saw him, it is a much closer case. If there's nothing to refute the fact that he says he slipped and fell and the gun went off accidentally, I think he honestly, in that scenario, I'm going to say he's found not guilty.
Okay. So what's your actual official prediction then?
That was it. Didn't you hear me?
I mean, you kind of were a little wishy-washy there. You kind of said, well, depends.
I'm gonna say not guilty.
You're saying not guilty.
I'm gonna say that I think no one saw him, and I think there's a lot of evidence that to find him guilty, but not enough to get to beyond reasonable doubt.
Okay. I am gonna say he is gonna get convicted. And you know, interestingly, I don't know if I'm making that prediction totally based on the law. It's more like the feel for the case in the sense that you have just this completely innocent victim, like completely innocent.
Right.
She didn't even know she was trespassing. I don't think she was a passenger in the car.
She was.
So she wasn't even driving the car.
She didn't even pull down the driveway.
So I feel like it just is going to be a stretch for a jury to say that this man has no criminal culpability for what happened, given the innocence of this victim. So that's kind of where I'm standing. I think he will get convicted. So we're split on this.
Yeah, we're split on this. Although I'll say, I think not guilty. And these predictions are only for the top charge.
Yeah.
We'll say that for the second degree murder.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're split. So we'll see. One of us is going to be a winner.
That's right. Interesting case though. I think I really do think the effective strategy here though is to really play up the fear and what was going through this man's brain at the time. I think that's their only chance, and we'll pay attention to see if he testifies, but I think that's coming.
Yeah, I think
so,
he is.
So, all right, well, enough guns and violence and shootings. How about something stupid, Russ?
I like it. Let's hear it. I think your turn, Colin.
It is time for... Criminal of the Week, our first one of 2024. This one, Russ, is going to follow a little bit of an unusual format. You'll kind of know what I'm talking about when you hear what I have to tell you about, but it's a different type of DCOTW. I can't tell if these people are smart or dumb, but here's what we got. First of all, what state we're going? We're coming right back here to Colorado. We got some dumb criminals here, Russ.
Here we are.
Yeah, it's not just Florida. Here's what we got. Michael Green and Byron Bolden are our two DCOTWs. They were convicted of shoplifting. And notably, they were dubbed by law enforcement as the KitchenAid Mixer Crew because apparently they had a penchant for targeting high-dollar items like KitchenAids, kitchen appliances, things like that.
Those are valuable.
Yeah, they are valuable. And so they get caught stealing this stuff. Now, of note, Russ, they were accused of stealing $2,094.98. Russ, what is the threshold for when shoplifting goes from a mere misdemeanor to a felony? What makes that decision possible?
That hits right at about the $2,000 mark.
That's right. So basically, in Colorado and other states, the severity of the charge you're facing depends on the value of the items that you stole.
Right.
In Colorado, if you're under $2,000, it's a misdemeanor. If you're over, it's a felony. Well, his lawyers were asking the jury during their jury trial defending this, say, well, you know, they there were some Kohl's coupons that were active at the time of the theft that marked down these items that totaled over $2,000 to less than $2,000. So they were saying, look, these items were on sale. These guys' sole items were on sale. This is a misdemeanor.
Yeah, they stole.
This isn't a felony.
They stole less than $2,000 because there were coupons and they were on sale and the total price would have been under $2,000.
creative argument. Did the jury buy it, Russ?
The jury, unfortunately for them, did not buy it.
No, they did not buy it. And we got a quote from District Attorney John Kellner, who said in a press conference, "Just because an item is on sale doesn't mean that it's free to steal." Sale items are for paying customers, right, not for would-be thieves. And now these defendants get to think about this lesson in jail and in prison. I guess you could say that based on their actions, they had to pay full price. Oh, so Russ, that's, I don't know if the lawyers or the defendants are the dumbasses in this one, but I don't know.
I'm going to give them pretty low marks for knuckleheads. I mean, at least you took a swing at it.
New listeners, this is where we rate the stupidity of our offender, 1 to 5. Knuckleheads is what we hand out, 5 being the stupidest thing we've ever seen, 1 being not so stupid.
Yeah, I actually, why the hell not take a shot at that? There's nothing to lose. If you get it wrong, you're still in the same position. I'm going to go with 1 knucklehead on this.
Yeah, I think I am too. I mean, Russ and I have actually seen this in our practice where, you know, a person's accused of breaking something or stealing something. Okay, how do you prove that was worth that amount?
Yeah.
But I think it's hilarious that the KitchenAid bandits, that argument was shot down. Right. These guys are in prison felonies.
And it makes sense to shoot it down. Like they didn't use the coupon. Like, I mean, the coupon may have been there, but they didn't use it.
Yeah, exactly. The MSRP is apparently what we look at. Right. So guys, that is our first podcast for 2024 in the books. Please contact us if you have some feedback, if you would like to be a guest on our show, if you have a suggestion for a topic involving a law. We'd love to talk about it.
I'll tell you, the Andrew Lester case was a topic that was submitted by a listener.
That was.
So you guys have a shot of getting your topic of choice, your topic du jour, if you will, on Is This Legal?
Where can people find us, Russ?
You can find us on X at Is This Legal Pod, Facebook at Hebbets McCallan, or you can email us at denvercrimelaw.com.
Denvercrimelaw@gmail.com.
Yes, sorry, at Gmail.
So, folks, we'll be back with another fresh one soon. Hope you have a great 2024. Bye-bye.
Johnny Law looked at me, said, Jebediah, can't you see them things you're doing just ain't right? Going around this town stirring up a fright. Get far driving in your motor car. Look Cornelius right in the eye. Said you ain't got proof. I ain't the guy. Said I may not wear no crown upon my head. I may not be regal. Tell me one thing, Cornelius, my friend. Is it legal?